even saw the lights of the Goodyear blimp, and it went ice cubes of pimp. Drunk as hell, but no throwing up. Halfway home, and my pager still blowing up. Today I didn't even have to use my AK. I gotta say it was a good day.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Valley Podcast, where the Yankees are, you know, doing stuff. Sometimes winning 12 games in a row, sometimes losing 15 games in a row. We are only slightly exaggerating. I'm Andrew Mearns, here with Matt Franchek, Matt Provenzano. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, since our last podcast, Yankees had a winning streak, a losing streak, I think another winning streak, and then just like we're kind of playing okay right now. So.
Yep, it's they're just a weird streaky group. They're just like, oh, we're just gonna lose a bunch of games now. Hope that's fine with you.
But they never look truly as bad as 2014 or 2013. Like, they never look that, you know, that level of dreadfulness that we saw. They always just kind of look okay. Like, they definitely don't look as bad, but, like, they're all over the place.
It's true.
Well, it's like, they got swept by the Rangers a couple weeks ago, and then the very next game they go out and put up, like, 15 against the Royals.
The All-Star team, you mean?
Yes, the All-Star Royals, except for, you know, Alex Rios, because he sucks. But Omar Infante, he's a legend. But one other exciting thing going on, obviously, A-Rod inching up toward 3,000 hits, because... You know, why not? It's right about that time where, you know, we kind of expected maybe he would be approaching 3,000 hits at this point in the season, albeit a lot sooner than we could have imagined because he's been playing so well. But, yeah, A-Rod at 2,999 hits after Thursday night's game, and he'll have a chance to go for 3,000 tonight. So, yeah, I'm going to say that he should do that. Because it would be beneficial for the Yankees. What say you?
I say I'm a fan of that.
I say he's three's greatest monster, and he should end with 2,099 hits and 666 home runs.
Yeah, he just announces after the game, you know what? Nah.
Or it could be like that movie Mr. 3000, and they're really like two or three of his hits get invalid, and he has to come back and play baseball, and he's like 55.
No, that it's like that actually does happen. The singles in the first thing, he's like, bye.
He hits a home run like 470 feet.
That leads to the Yankees having a new superstar with the first name T-Rex, so I'm okay with that.
But yeah, I'd be cool with
that. I think that's the most that this movie's been talked about in years.
let's analyze.
Including like, the people that made it.
Bernie Mac's performance in it. He was Bernie Mac in a baseball uniform. That was about it.
Yep.
But anywho, yeah. So A-Rod going for 3,000 hits. I mean, he'll probably get it done tonight, I would imagine, just because he's been on a bit of a roll lately. It seems like the two games off that he had when the Yankees were playing in Miami, and he couldn't DH because of the silly NL rules, those seem to have, re-energized him. Maybe that's just who he is at this point in his career, where he'll occasionally need, like, the couple days off to get a breather.
Yeah. I don't know if he maintains it, but I'm fine with the pace he's on. Because if he plays, 140 games, like, that's insane. If he actually continues to play as well as he's been playing.
Yeah.
I didn't even expect... I mean, if he comes out to be, like, a two-win player of some sort, that's, like, a 90th percentile outcome.
Yeah, and he's... After tonight's game, he's up to 278, 384, 505 with a 147 WRC+, which is kind of ludicrous considering, you know, he played 2 months over 2 years and has, you know, had the two hip surgeries and basically he's just a DH at this point, but, you know, it's working out, so.
From 2013 to 2014, only of regular baseball players, not just someone who played like 20 games, only Robinson Cano had higher than 500 slugging.
So, he's doing good things.
Yeah.
I don't think last year anyone had a 500 slugging from the Yankees. I think the only person was Martin Prado and Chris Young, but that was in like 20 or 30 games.
And A-Rod hasn't actually slugged 500 since 2010, which is the last year he hit 30 home runs.
Yeah. So, I don't know if he keeps it up, but I'm hoping.
I think he should. It would be better for the team. But knowing him, he will selfishly return to norm with meaningless 8th-inning home runs.
Well, then you have Mark Cherry slugging 574, so there's always him.
That's right. Teixeira is another guy who probably would be getting talked about more if A-Rod wasn't around, but, you know, obviously it's fine, because he needs someone to be hitting on this team, but he's playing basically as well as he did in his prime, if not better, so. He has 18 home runs already, and he had 22 all of last year.
Not enough hits, Andrew.
That's right. He's only hitting 252.
Too low batting average, Andrew.
252? Please.
You don't pay him to hit 252.
he's having his best year, I think, since his 2009. You know, at least on pace.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But he's again, 252.
Yeah. And by WRC+, this is his best offensive year of his career.
Yep, even better than the crazy 2008.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he did have 2008 defense, though, so.
He had 6.9 war.
Nice.
Good work, Mark Teixeira.
I think Zips and Steamer both have him putting up 3.3 war, which would be his best year since 2011.
Yep. Sounds about right, because 2012 was when he started getting hurt more, and he kind of slipped in production a little bit, but.
Yep.
But it seems like he, unless something goes terribly wrong, which, you know, always could, because we don't know how much we can trust the baby wrists, but he is on pace for a 30-homer season, which, I mean, who is the only person who's done that for the Yankees past few years is Cano, and that was it, I think.
Yeah.
Like, even going back to 2012, I don't think anyone hit 30 home runs.
Do you not remember the 30 home run 2013 by Alberto Gonzalez?
Oh, man, must have escaped my mind. Was that the same year that Brent Lillibridge had 200 hits?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And Reed Brignac put up like
30 Reed Brignac
OBP 400.
Mike Zagurski had 30 saves. But I think the most remarkable thing on the Mark Teixeira thing is usually when guys have like a big comeback year, it's usually only a few years into their contract. You know, like Albert Pujols is having a big year, and like there's some guys like Prince Fielder is having a big year, and like usually it's like, oh, they're having such a big comeback year, but there's 6 years left in their contract. Mark Teixeira's contract expires in a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So all he has to really do is maintain like a similar level of production, or even like much less, for the next year and a half, and that's it. And then that's it. And he's done. And I think he could do that. And I think that this year he's shown that he's capable of doing that. And I mean, I think he's even shown that if, like, he does really well up until the time he's done, the Yankees would be willing to maybe offer him, like, sort of a a gesture of goodwill and like a 1-year pillow contract or something.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, so, I mean, it could be, obviously this is the type of tough decision the Yankees want to have to make in a year and a half, but, and who knows where Greg Bird will be either, but I think there's a decent chance that maybe if everything goes well, maybe Bird will come up at some point next year, and then maybe like a transition year or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on how well Teixeira plays, because if he plays like so well, he's going to want to get like a 2 or 3 year contract after he's finished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if he sort of declines and goes back to sort of that like 15 to 20% better than league average hitting, he may only get like a 1 year contract. And then he may actually be better off like kind of like sticking with the Yankees and working on sort of a platoon basis with Bird, because he could get more playing time if Bird doesn't play well. But that's obviously all very speculative.
Yep, that's true. But either way, it's a hope. I hope it's something that the Yankees will have to actually think about, rather than the uneasiness that they're feeling with, you know, like a CeCe Sabathia's contract right now.
Exactly. But, yeah, where it's like he's got, you know, as opposed to a year and a half, it's like 2.5 years.
Yeah, because he has that vesting option that only doesn't vest if like he has a shoulder injury, something like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Or even if they move him to the bullpen, it's got to be because of a shoulder injury. I don't know why. That's such a weird clause.
I guess they were trying to safeguard themselves against some kind of injury, and maybe that was the only part. That was the only one that Sabathia's party would agree on.
Mm.
But in his last 21 starts, he has a 5.34 ERA, albeit with a 4.51 FIP, but, you know, this CeCe just gives up a ton of hits these days. That's the problem. Like, he's just extremely hittable. I don't know what the problem is.
The pattern seems to be like he has a start like tonight, which is like, you know, it's decent. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a perfectly fine outing. Then, like, he'll start off the next game, like, first 3 innings, he'll get good again. Like, the fourth, he'll just get, like, destroyed.
Yeah.
That's what it seems to be, like.
The one bad inning.
No, I was just gonna say, like, it'll be, like, one decent start, and then one, like okay, first couple innings, and it's like, oh, this is why he's bad. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that's just
like,
sort of
you think he's turning around and gulps him crashing bat down.
That's kind of what a bad pitcher does, like. But we only feel that way because he has a remnant of being good. If it was any other bad pitcher, like, we wouldn't be surprised. We would just be like, oh, well, of course. He's a bad pitcher, and bad pitchers have bad innings. But we keep trying to, like, every once in a while we're trying to, like, convince ourselves that he's going to be good again.
Yeah, actually today is kind of like a good example of the kind of pitcher that he is at this point, where, like, his ERA is higher than you feel like it should be, considering where his FIP is. But the problem is that even though he had 7 strikeouts and no walks in the 6 innings, he still gave up a bunch of hits, he still gave up a bunch of runs, and a home run. So, it sucks, but, I mean, I just don't really think we can expect him to meet up to that FIP or what, anything like that anymore. And don't even get me started on the ex-FIP, because that's just, I don't really think a lot of stock in that.
No, because he's
not... I don't think he's going to get close to that one.
Nope, I don't think he's... I don't think CeCe can give up home runs at league average rates anymore.
I don't think anyone really can in the stadium.
Nope, not really. But he's been kind of frustrating, and Nathan Eovaldi has been extremely frustrating, just because, you know, he can throw 98, but as so many people have pointed out, like, it's just kind of a straight 98, and it's not that hard for batters to hit it. Like, there have been, I can't even count how many articles I've read that talk about his repertoire and his talents, but they acknowledge at the same time, like, he should be doing a lot better than he is, but he just doesn't have a lot of movement on his pitches, so.
Yeah.
That's how you get your, you know, 5.12 ERA and 97 hits allowed already.
Yeah, I've been waning on my optimism I thought they were kind of work with him, and you know, the splitter they were supposed to add, and he's working. Like, you could see his like repertoire is clearly not at a level where it's stable at all. Like, it's constantly changing. But yeah, I think that people even saying the stuff is great, that's a little bit, I think, overstated. I don't think the stuff is that great.
Because yeah, if the stuff is that great, he just throws hard, really. I think.
Yeah, exactly. That's essentially it. Like, he just throws really hard, and his command is blah, and like, he doesn't really have good control. Like, it's just no discernible skill. And he hasn't been able to add any move. That's what I thought they were really going to do. I thought they were going to add some movement to his fastball. Maybe try to add a little arm side run, and they just didn't. Just like completely straight. And I don't even know if you can teach that. So I don't know. I don't think that he's that good.
Well, he has thrown five wild pitches, so there is that.
Yeah, I think that he could just be a middle of the rotation starter, but that's fine. And, like, he's still pretty young and doesn't really cost much money, so there are worse things in the world, to be honest. And it's, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't regret the trade, because I think it's one that you'd have to make when you get the chance to improve your rotation with a young 25-year-old guy with Eveldi's talent. And all it costs you is getting off the hook for Martin Prado and
David Phelps could end up being of a similar quality, but the thing is, like, David Phelps, there's zero chance he gets better. Like, he is what he is. No one's writing think pieces about David Phelps, about how his stuff is so great, and like, he's really good, but he, you know, he should be better, and no one's writing that piece about David Phelps because he is what he is. Like, that's why they made the trade, because, like, Eovaldi's such an intriguing character because he should be better. So I guess that's kind of... So I guess the Yankees would have, like... They'd be pissed if they didn't try it. Because at least they're going to try it, and if it works out the same, then they just break even.
Right.
And to be honest, I think the idea of having Garrett Jones was a little bit... underreported, because I think having that backup first baseman is much more valuable than people thought, even though Marcus Scherzer is playing well, so it didn't matter. But him as insurance was pretty valuable. Just having him as the platoon bat, and just in case Teixeira was hurt, he was there, which the Yankees did not have for the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And he's been hitting a little bit better. I think it took him a little bit of time to adjust to the bench role,
because
I think he'd pretty much been a starter almost his entire career up until like this year, so... That doesn't just instantly come where it's like, oh, guess I'm a bench player now. Then you just know how to be like, okay, I'm going to come off the bench, get some hits, and go back to the bench. So.
He's not on the Marlins anymore.
Nope.
Where you have Garrett Jones and Casey McGee as starting corner infielders.
At the Yankees, you have an interesting decision coming up when Ivan Nova returns to provide his... he's making a rehab start. It should be his final rehab start. Friday night, tonight. So, provide everything goes well, the Yankees are going to put him back in the rotation, and maybe they won't make a move immediately because they're in a long stretch of games played consecutively where maybe they'll want to give another guy an extra day and kind of go... I don't want to say they'll go with a six-man, but like a pseudo-six-man for like a week or two before they have to decide who they're going to bump. And... I mean, it might just be Adam Warren by default, because they're not moving CeCe. They're not moving Eovaldi. That's not why they're there.
I think that they skip some
starts. And that Pineda guy.
They're going to skip Pineda. I think that they're going to try to limit innings for Pineda and Tanaka, and I think they may skip some starts just before the All-Star break to give people rest. And I think that's what they'll do. I don't think they're going to go. I think maybe they'll reassess... They'll probably have a personnel meeting during the All-Star break and assess like what they want to do moving forward. But I think their plan going forward is when Nova comes back, they'll be able to skip a couple of starts in the next couple of turns, and then before you know it, it's the All-Star break, and then they can kind of reset.
That's true. And they can sort of get a gauge on how Nova looks, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's just coming back from Tommy John, so that's a huge question.
I think if this was August, it'd be a completely different conversation, because then you're talking about, okay, we have like a couple months left in the season, we really need to make a playoff push. We need to decide right now what our rotation is and who we're sticking with for the rest of the season. I think now they're like, okay, well, we can have a little bit of time to figure it out and see what works and what doesn't. So, Yeah. I'm fine with it. I don't think anyone's like going to be forced out of the rotation. I think whatever they decide on the rotation, it's going to be pretty plainly obvious. And I think that whatever decision they make, it's going to make sense. It's not going to be rash at all.
And I do think that Warren is going to pitch a bit more normally, I'd say, than just like, you know, he was great for that one about month long stretch, and I think he still could be decent, but I think his peak is just like an okay starter. So I don't know. He's been getting the job done despite, like, he's kind of like the opposite of Eovaldi in some sense, because he's not really striking any guys out either, and he actually has a higher walk rate than Eovaldi, but he's actually able to, you know, get out of innings, not allow a ton of hits, and just have a better control of the ball game, it seems like. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that he's just not a popular pitcher. He's not someone, he's sort of like a rich man's David Phelps. Like his stuff is a little bit better, but he's not, you know, a star, but he's going to be like a middle of the order, middle of the rotation pitcher. But no one's going to really, you know, blink an eye. But I think that's fine, and I think that's what they need. I think now he's going to start to get stretched out and start to pitch deeper into games, which I think they need more than him being a superstar.
I do think that he is probably the most likely person that they would shift to the bullpen if they do decide to go to a more normal schedule, but I don't know. And that could just be for, like, one stretch of starts before they bring him back in, or, you know, if this rotation's very liable, someone gets hurt too, and maybe, like, all this conversation goes moot, but I mean, that's kind of the Yankees' rotation right now. It's an interesting place, and Tanaka's still pitching great, which, you know, looks like that month, the month he had to miss with the tendonitis, right? That didn't seem to bother him too much after he came back, so that's good. It's just always going to be a question of, like, how's he doing? Is he healthy? Does he need more time off? And I think you already are seeing, like, the Yankees trying to, like, play it very safe for them, giving him the extra day in so that he's ready for the Sunday at the Tiger series coming up, and he's able to go deep in that ball game and pitch well, because he does tend to pitch pretty well. Unlike Pineda, he seems to pitch well with better rest, with more rest.
Yeah, I don't know if that's because he was used to a six-man rotation, but
yeah, that could very well be it.
Could just be a coincidence. I have no idea, but I've kind of given up on the whole I'm going to be worried about him every time he pitches, because that's just exhausting.
Yeah, I try not to even think about it. And, like, if bad news comes, bad news will come, so whatever.
Yeah.
And, of course, right now the back of the bullpen's a bit uncertain, too, with Andrew Miller on the DL for a little while. Obviously, Dellin in the closer's role, no problem there. Justin Wilson makes me nervous a lot, but on the whole, he's okay. I do like Chasen Shreve a lot more, and I know that that's probably the popular sentiment among Yankees fans at this point, because Shreve has been pretty excellent.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would agree with that. I think he's going to be, when Miller comes back, he's going to be the quote-unquote seventh-inning guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, just de facto.
Yeah.
And I think that Wilson will sort of be the Sean Kelly of the group. I don't think Justin Wilson's bad. I just think
he's okay. He just his control is not great, and that's what always seems to burn him. Like, he'll put a base runner onto the walk, maybe give up a hit here and there, and his strikeouts don't always save him, but I think in the interim, he's fine.
I know these stats aren't the end all be all, but, like, you look at his ERA compared to, like, his batting average against, and it's like, yeah, he's probably he's decent. He's fine. He's not what his ERA says.
Right. I like him more than I did Sean Kelly. Anyway.
Yeah, Sean Kelly was lightning in a bottle. The essence of it.
But I do really like Shreve a lot, and I think that he'll be a very useful asset throughout the season. It's just a little bit more uneasy these days with, like, the only two relievers I'm, like, totally confident in right now are Dellin and Shreve. Wilson I'm okay with. Everyone else is just like, because it's, you know, Chris Martin, who almost forced Dellin into the game tonight, even though it was, like, a 9-3 game when he answered. And then it's Chris Capuano, long reliever. Sergio Santos, the corpse.
You're not cool with Sergio Santos? You don't think he's going to be the next closer?
Probably not. You know what? I guess he did have the one good game where he got out of bases loaded, no one out. Thanks, Jose Ramirez. Oh, I totally forgot that they have Jose DePaula on the team randomly now. Because they needed someone to be a long man. But he hasn't pitched yet, and I don't think he will.
Probably not. Just an extra body, just in case.
He's just hanging out. Enjoying the per diem while he can.
He's hanging out in the bullpen, eating Twizzlers.
Trying to, like, you know, chat up Jason Shreve and Chris Capuano, and they're just like, wait, who are you again? Security?
You guys interested in timeshares?
Yes, I'm sorry, guys. I'm a minor leaguer. I have to moonlight selling timeshares.
And as a used car salesman?
I can get you some great deals. I know a guy who knows a guy who can help you out there. Joe of Paula. Then right now with the lineup, obviously tonight, or on Thursday night, they had a great night where they scored 9 runs, put a big inning up in the 8th against, you know, some pretty crappy pitching, granted. But other than Tex and A-Rod, it's up and down. Gardner's fine. McCann looks better than he did last year. But, you know, he'll still have his moments where he'll strike out and crush a rally like he did today. And Beltran's very hit or miss. Like, look, how bad did he look when he struck out on those, what, basically 4 straight pitches in the dirt?
Yep. Like, his pitch recognition was dreadful. This is, like, a Hall of Famer talking about. Like, he couldn't recognize a curveball anymore. He was just sitting fastball.
Mm-hmm. And then he turns around and hits the go-ahead home run in the 8th inning, so.
To be fair, like, if you can't hit a home run on that pitch, if you're Carlos Beltran, like, you should not be playing baseball anymore. It's a fastball, like, right in your wheelhouse, right exactly where you should be hitting a pitch. If you're not hitting that, then you've got serious problems. So, as much as it was great, I was kind of just, like, almost more relieved that he was capable of swinging the bat at that pitch.
Yeah, we're going to do a classic Effectively Wild. Watch the replay while the podcast is going on. Oh, yes, that was, wow, that was right down the middle, basically. And a little bit up, too, that's where Beltran likes to get the ball at this point, too. So that he can help lift it. But, yeah.
He needs extra help with the lift.
There we go, yeah.
Yeah, so, if you're not hitting that, you're not hitting anything.
But anyway, Beltran's very frustrating. Steven Drew and Didi Gregorius are Steven Drew and Didi Gregorius.
Yep.
That's all you can really say about them. I mean, Didi, I think, has been hitting a little bit better over the past month or so, but
yeah,
it's still, those overall numbers ain't pretty.
Yeah, I don't think he's hitting. I think I've given up on that.
No, I don't think he's ever going to hit, but I had maybe scant hope that he would at least go up to, like, an 80 WRC plus, maybe. But he's down. After the 1-for-5 tonight, he's down to 62, so.
What they have to hope is that he'll, like, pull, like, a Brennan Ryan and just, like, fluke into a league average hitting a season.
Yeah. Like, maybe that'll happen once. Although what's sad is that, you know, so Drew has a, let's see, I'm going to look this up now. So DD Gregorius has the 62 WRC plus after tonight. Steven Drew has a 60 after tonight. Robinson Cano is a 70.
So,
which is not much better.
Look at your life, look at your choices.
God, I don't even know. I don't even know what happened to Robbie.
Cashman knew.
Apparently he scratched due to back stiffness tonight, so maybe
I wouldn't be surprised if it was an injury or something.
Yeah, like, he was tremendous as recently as last year, so it's inexplicable, really, so. But anyway, Yankees have had a bit of an outfield mix, interesting outfield mix, too, with Jacoby Ellsbury going on the DL at the end of May after that game in D.C. So we've had sort of a revolving door of young left-handed hitting outfielders. Slade Heath got entered, was kind of exciting for 6 games, then got hurt because that's what Slade Heath got do. And Ramon Flores came up for a little bit. Was okay, not like flashy or anything, which is basically what Ramon Flores is. And then
it's some nice defensive plays.
Yeah, he had made some nice defensive plays and was just, you know, around. Mason Manan, they cycled into Mason Williams, and Mason has had even, I would say, even better defense because, you know, he's actually playing center field and they don't have to ask Gardner to play center. And, you know, he's been hitting here and there. He had the double tonight. He had the big dinger in his first game, which was pretty exciting. Even though I think they got blown out in that game, but it was still pretty exciting to watch him finally get that first hit. Yeah. I think it was wise to not give up on him after 11 at-bats like that one guy wanted to.
Yeah, look at his batting average. Well, now he's batting .263, so
fun with small sample size. He has a 140 WRC plus. He entered today with a 77. Cue small sample size song.
He's gonna fly. You look and see. He's gonna hit a 140 WRC plus for the rest of his career.
That's true. I'm sorry, Mason Williams. We're underestimating you.
That was one of the greatest comments of all time. When someone was complaining about his batting average after like 3 games.
It's all over, man. So, that's the state of the Yankees Major League team.
Oh, by the way.
Mm-hmm?
By the way, Derek Jeter's WRC Plus last year, 11 points higher than Didi's.
That's not that much, but it's depressing that Jeter's WRC Plus is better. But then again, he also had the range of a Moai, I would say.
Yeah.
Didi has a full win more than Jeter did last year already. Mind you, it's 0.2 compared to negative point. Or wait, hold on. Never mind, I messed that up. Didi has 0.2 and Jeter had negative 0.2.
Aha! So slightly above replacement level, but still multiple replacement level.
Well, if you're going by baseball perspectives, it's like a win and a half better.
There you go. Of course, FRAA is, has always been very anti-cheater defense. Even more so than any other stat, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's like every year, he's basically the worst.
But, you know, it was really just take your pick of your defensive stats to rag on Jeter, because pretty much all of them are not good, except the fielding percentage.
That's the only one I look at.
Yeah, that's true. The best ones are minor league fielding percentage. They'll tell you the whole story.
Yeah, I just take minor league fielding percentage and convert it into minor league war. Yep. So.
And
then put it into a projection system that goes for 20 years. Yeah, so it basically says that Didi Gregorius, according to Warp Baseball Prospectus, Didi is 2.4 wins better.
All right.
It said that he was a negative 24.6.
Gracious. So, another exciting thing that happened over the past 2 weeks while we were on podcast hiatus / the computer at the last file, the MLB draft happened, and Yankees made their picks, and, I mean, I can turn over to Matt P. to talk about the draft a little bit, since, you know, the whole draft of the show blog, have a bit of an idea of what's going on with these players. I mean, I read a little bit about them, but you can certainly shed some light on some of the Yankees' top picks.
Yeah, sure. So this was, I like this draft. It seems like it's in the mold of what the Yankees are trying to do the past few years, which is more of a college heavy draft. And if you look at the past first overall selections, they're usually of a typical mold. They're usually like a lefty high school pitcher, a toolsy outfielder, or something like that. And I think now you can see with Aaron Judge and Eric Jagielo, they're moving towards more of like a polished college player, because I think they've recognized that their player development staff is terrible. And they've done a terrible job at developing minor league players, so they're probably better off picking players who are more close to finished products. So they chose James Caprillion, and Caprillion's pretty good. I wouldn't say he's great. I don't think he's going to be a star or anything, but he's going to be probably a middle-of-the-rotation type of arm. But the good thing that they like is that he's probably going to be in the big leagues in, like, 2 years, which they would be totally cool with, because then you'd only have to do, you know, you'd be able to send him through the minors, and he would sort of shoot through, and they wouldn't be able to kind of just let him do his thing and sort of refine his mechanics and work on his command a little bit, and then he'd be there, and that would be it. And they continue that with Kyle Holder and Jeff Degano, who are both also kind of finished products. Degano is sort of like either a back-end starter or a loogie type, and Kyle Holder is sort of the poor man's Brennan Ryan. Very, very, very good defense. Probably the best defense of any shortstop in the draft, but can't hit a lick. So, but if he hits, then he's good. But it's really all dependent on that. But at the very least, Kyle Holder can play as a defensive player. He can even do like what Mason Williams is doing now and just play as sort of the fourth outfielder, or in his case, sort of a utility infielder. And to be honest, like, you pay him $1.8 million, that's not that bad to get a utility infielder and not have to really develop him at all. The real sort of steal of the draft was Drew Finley, who they had to sign over slot, and they sort of had to save money elsewhere, like on Holder and Chance Adams, and, you know, all those other places they saved money.
So Ryan Krill, $5,000 bonus.
Yeah. Ryan Krill is sort of the one-trick pony, just has power, that's pretty much it.
I did enjoy that one grand slam he hit, I think.
Yeah, I think he hit it like Petco or something.
Something like that.
And even though it was like metal bat, he hit it like 500 feet, but that's pretty much all he has. But you get a senior sign. That's the key. You get a senior sign, you can sign for almost nothing.
Yeah, he seems like Kyle Roller Jr.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison. He's not going to hit for much other than power, and that stuff usually evaporates. Unless they feel like, hey, maybe we straighten his swing out. You know, it's like a lottery ticket.
Yeah,
you get a one-tool guy, and then you save some money, and you get a Drew Finley, who he is the boomer bust type of guy. He could have gone in the first round, but the Yankees were able to sort of scoop him away from college, and he's sort of a top 30, I think, type of talent. But he's totally boomer bust. He could absolutely be nothing, or he could be a number two starter, you know, or in between, he could be a reliever. But that's what they're kind of banking on, is they spent a little bit of extra money on him, and he's the guy they take the upside. But to be honest, he's really the only guy they took that was, like, really type of high upside guy. The rest of them are, you know, either depth picks that aren't going to sign, or, you know, college players who are just senior signs and they're not going to get much money, or, you know, it's a lot of, like, safe college picks pretty much. But I think that's fine because they can't develop players themselves.
Mm-hmm. And one thing about Caprillion that I heard a lot, I mean, I listened to a bunch of reports about some of these players, like, Baseball America raved about UCLA's program, and they have a lot of confidence in the pitchers that they produce. And even though Caprillion is not going to be, like, a star or anything, sounds like they're pretty confident that he's going to be a solid player. So that's great. So.
He performed better than I think Derek Cole did when he was at UCLA. Mm. And Caprillion's only a junior. I mean, Cole played until I think he was a senior, and Caprillion had, I think, beat him in ERA and beat him in strikeouts. I think Caprillion had, like, was like fourth in the program history in strikeouts, so he was one of the better UCLA starters ever. So he's pretty prominent in the UCLA baseball community. I have no doubt that he will make the big league level. How good he'll be, I could not tell you. I know there have been people who have complained about his mechanics are a little wonky, and he has a bit of an inverted W, which, you know, people have sort of had some concerns about, but to be honest, I think the inverted W thing is a little bit overblown. It's like sort of the old school scout thing that they say. It's like, oh, you don't have the inverted W. Pitchers have any. Like, look at Chris Sale. Like, his whole body is an inverted W. So, I don't know.
But the real story is Isaac Fleming.
Yes.
I don't care if it's supposed to be pronounced Isaac. He's Isaac.
No, he's Isaac.
Yes, exactly.
Isaac,
who did sign. He signed the Yankees, and he had a special Twitter account where he has to approve followers, and he approved us, because we are special.
And then the mayor of Dublin, Paddy O'Brien.
Paddy O'Brien, yes. Maybe the most Irish name you could ever imagine. What was it you called him, Matt F? He said Other Pete.
Oh, yeah. That was, like, Also Big Pete, I think.
Also Big
Even
Pete.
Even though his name's not Pete.
And, of course,
he got another Andrew Miller.
Yeah, you know, minutes after they announced that Andrew Miller is going on the DL, they're like, fine, gotta replace him with another Andrew Miller. Let's draft that dude from high school. Yankees are now selecting
Andrew
Miller.
Andrew Miller's got a toll in our heart.
Mm-hmm. I heard that Andrew Miller is actually kind of an interesting high school prospect, but that, I mean, obviously, if he's a 34th round pick, they expect him to go to school, but could be something there.
Yeah, that's what happens a lot. These guys, like, I always find it funny seeing them, where they're drafted in high school, and then the ones that become, like, first round picks, they get drafted in, like, the 35th round, and then they go to college, and they come back, and they're, like, 10th overall.
Like,
I always wonder.
Judge was drafted in the 31st round out of high school. And then, you know, first round. Which is kind of funny. Probably because it was the same idea where the A's are just like, whatever, we'll try him, see if we can get him to come here. And then it was like, nah, I'm going to go to Cal State Fresno and just destroy it for a few years.
Yeah, it's hard because the slot money is so restrictive that you need to save a lot. Like, first of all, you have to know that the guy's going to be that good, which they don't really know because at that, basically what happens is after the, you know, like, I'd say the 5th to the 10th round, they essentially just go in a room and they, like, ask the area scout, like, their opinions on the guy. And they usually just try to advocate for the guy that they've been seeing all year. So they'll basically just go up and be like, oh, yeah, I saw this guy and I thought he was pretty good, like, you should sign him. And they just decide on the spot to sign them. You know, I mean, like, the scouting director probably never saw them and, you know, the GM never saw them. So, like, it's essentially just one guy saw them a few times and thought they were kind of good. At some high school field against, like, other 14-year-olds. So those are, like, big wild guesses, and a team would very rarely blow their slot money on a guy that one of your area scouts saw a couple of times. So that's why very rarely you see these guys, like, in the later rounds get scooped up.
Do they all look like Clint Eastwood in Trouble with the Curve?
No, they look like...
This is the guy! I don't need no computers telling me about it.
No, I know, because I'm sure you're familiar with Hudson Polinski. He's he's told me, because he worked with the Rays last year, so he would go on hiatus for periods of time. I would just see him disappear, and he would go searching for players. when you go to these random high schools and these random colleges and just send in a report to the Rays and that would be it. And they would just sort of make a decision.
And he looked like Clint Eastwood, right? That's the rule. You know, if you're a scout, you have to look old and grizzled even if you're young.
He was an old and grizzled, like, 21-year-old.
Jason Parks, now that he works for the Cub, is now old and grizzled. Just the rule.
Isn't his Twitter profile picture an old baseball player? So he has to be old.
I think it is an old baseball player.
It's Bo Valinsky.
Because I think it looks very much like him. It looks very... As soon as I see the picture and I think it looks like... I think it's him for a second.
I feel like we also... where we're talking about great names, we should talk about Deacon Lippitt.
That's also a great name.
Yep.
I believe Matt F's nickname for him was just Deacon Lippitt.
And John
he doesn't
Jackson.
Need a nickname. That's a pretty dang good on its own.
At Deacon Lip 07.
And Chance Adams.
Chance Adams, great name. And apparently he was kind of an impressive dude, Dallas Baptist. I did listen to that whole Baseball America 2.5 hour podcast of where they went through every single draft pick.
Yeah, me too.
Yep. But they, for pretty much any time like a Dallas Baptist dude came up, they were like, oh my god, they really love that program. And maybe there a lot of those guys aren't going to be like huge people, but could be interesting dudes.
Yeah, the only thing that happens though qualm I have with these draft analyses is they're always in such short snippets. They never like dismiss them. They're always kind of positive, like vaguely positive. They're like, oh, this guy is pretty good at this, and he could be pretty good. But then, like, you start getting further and further down, and they're still similarly optimistic.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to differentiate from the guy you saw at 50, the guy you saw at 150. But there's, like, a clear gap in talent there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like probably it's kind of implied that once they're talking about, like, you know, late 20th, 30th round picks, then they're just like, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
If you squint hard enough. Were there any, like, draft picks that you didn't really feel as great about? I know, like, with the Jeff Hendricks pick, I was like, I mean, I guess if you're going fourth round at that point, you probably are going to end up with, like, a bench dude, but, yeah.
To be honest, I was actually more upset about the Holder pick than anything else. Like, I like the fact that Holder's defense is good, but I think that's where you want to go for upside in your draft. Really, what I think is an ideal strategy is, after the first round, it's a crapshoot. Like, I think most studies have found that after the first round, they're just essentially guessing. Mm-hmm. So even if Drew Finley is sort of a first-round-ish pick, you're still almost guessing at a third-round guy. Even Jeff DeGano is more of a guessing type of pick than a Kaprielian, who's a more established type of pick. So if you're going to start taking risks, I think you want to take a risk in the first round where you know the talent is more, what do I say, like the information you have on them is more reliable. Like, as I was saying, like, as you start going further and further down the chart, down your board, the information on them starts getting more and more scarce. So you may have a couple of area scouts, maybe a cross-checker saw them, but that's it. Like, you didn't see your scouting director and go see them, they didn't have much video on them, like, pretty scarce information. So you want to be starting to take risks on guys who have really established talent, and I think that taking, like, trying to just go with Kyle Holder, I think is a little bit of kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a cop-out. Unless they really feel the battle play, which I don't buy. I don't think they think the battle play. I think they think that maybe they'll get a fluky bat out of him, or that his defense will be so good that it'll just be better than, you know, that he won't need his bat to be good. But I just think that for almost $2 million, you can get a guy over slot and save money elsewhere where you don't need to spend as much money later. You want to spend your money up front where you know the picks are higher talent. I mean, there were some guys on the board at that point who I much preferred. Chris Shaw, I preferred to Kyle Holder. I preferred Cabrian Hayes. I preferred Kyle Funkhauser, like, absolutely. Let's see. In the second round, I think there were more. Daz Cameron, Nathan Kirby, Cody Ponce, like, all these guys I personally think are better than Kyle Holder. I think Kyle Holder was more of a 50th overall type of guy than 30th.
It's possible that maybe they could have just been viewing, because this is, I think, as the consensus was that this is one of the Dreeker, one of the weaker draft classes in recent memory, that even though they were still in the first round, it was already like they were in the second round where it gets murkier. So maybe they just thought...
I guess that's the way they were thinking, but...
Yeah. I don't know if that's the right one, but, you know.
And there were still, like, the guys who, like the other one that I thought that slipped through their fingers was Chris Betts. You know, Chris Betts was a guy they'd been targeting, and maybe they thought he was going to slip to 57 and went to 52, but that's, like, right in the mold of what the Yankees like. He's, like, left-handed, power-hitting catchers out of high school who that's what they can develop. They're good at that. So I felt like not choosing him was kind of odd. I thought there were better guys on the board at that point. I thought the Degano pick was fine because, like, at that point you're in the second round and the picks are getting a little bit thinner. But there were dudes into the top 50. I even thought, like, even like Brett Lillick, he's one of the few guys in the top 50 I'd actually seen. I saw him a couple of years ago in Arizona. He's pretty good. Even him I would have been cool with. But I thought Holder was incredibly safe. High floor, but I don't think there's anything to be higher than, like, defensive utility player. Unless he just, all of a sudden, just it clicks with the bat.
Yeah, I mean, it is possible maybe he'll figure something out with the bat. I'm more optimistic about him than I was when, say, the Yankees drafted Cito Culver, because that was just a huge project and one that I don't think they really understood what they're getting into. But
definitely a huge project.
But, and I do like that they are playing it a little bit safer, because just, like, they've been bit on the ass so many times over the past few years before, like, the 2013 draft. You got, you know, Ty Hensley, who's never been healthy, really. You got Dante Bichette Jr., which is just should never have been a pick, really. Cito, Slade Heathcott, despite, you know, like, occasional flashes of talent, big injury problems. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that they haven't really had a great first-round pick since Jeter, or maybe if you want to say Eric Milton, because even though they traded him. But, yeah, they're just going for, like, riskier plays, and I think it's a bit smarter to go for, like, a guy like Caprilli. And I do agree that with Holder, maybe I would have gone a little bit direction, but I guess...
Yeah. I think the point I made in my own draft review of the Yankees draft was that the Yankees, the difference is if you're a team that's like the Astros or the Diamondbacks, like, you can't afford to buy a star in free agency. You're just never going to be able to do that. This is not going to happen. So the only way you're going to develop a star is you either draft them or you trade for them before they become a star. So that you sort of have to go for the higher upside guys at some point, or else you'll never have a star player ever. While the Yankees, in theory, can afford to buy a star in the prime of their career. So, but the thing that they often spend so much money on they don't need to is these, like, spare parts. They go out and they spend $25 million before the, you know, in the offseason on these guys who are terrible. When if they had a few guys who were higher floor, they'd be able to sort of fill in parts with their farm system. I mean, just imagine in 2013, instead of having the revolving door of players and the Vernon Wellses and all these weird guys, you were just able to plug in guys from the farm system and spend nothing.
I think that's what they've been happy about this year, with, like, them being able to cycle in Flores, Heathcott, now Mason Williams.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of having to go out and get, like, some random outfielder from another AAA team, like your Thomas Neals of the world, you can just plug in a guy from your own system and not have to worry about
it. Exactly. And I think that people forget how valuable that is, because if the Yankees save $15 to $20 million on that, you don't notice it, and it may not make the team, like, appreciably better. But the Yankees may look at their budget and say, hey, we can afford to sign another guy, like another actual, like, above-average player. And then all of a sudden you have an above-average player and pieces that are from the farm, and then maybe once in a while you get a solid utility piece or a second-division starter. And, you know, they don't need to get, like, a Bryce Harper, and they won't, because they're never going to get that high of a pick. But if they play safe, they make a middle of the, you know, like, the thing
or
is...
Or even just building the bullpen.
Too. Exactly. Good bullpen, like, you get Dellen and...
You know, you don't have to spend money for, like, the Steve Carces and these bad contracts they've given to relievers over the years.
And then you get guys like the Adam Warrens and the David Phelps who just, like, fill the back end of your rotation, and then you can still afford to get a CC or, you know, or Tanaka and you can do both. And I think that's what their plan is that the peripheral pieces need to be farmed, But the stars, you can still buy them. They'll still be available, and you'll be fine doing that because they have the money. It would be kind of silly if their entire team was a farm system and they never got not good players, you know, never got good players in free agency.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that they would still like to see an actual, like, position player come up and take some of those starts, like, that they haven't been getting. Like, in their lineup right now, the only homegrown dude is Gardner, really. So...
Yeah, but...
Occasionally Mason Williams, John Ryan Murphy, but for the most part, it's just all these other dudes, and I think they're really hoping for like an Aaron Judge or an Eric Jagielo, even if Jagielo has to move over to first, or Greg Bird, that those guys can come up and fill those roles and maybe not necessarily be like the huge stars, even though like Judge has great power. I think even if he hits his peak, he's still just, you know, a 30-homer right fielder, which... valuable, but it's not going to be like the MVP of the league. They're still really useful players to have in your lineup that you don't have to go out and pay for.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are the top picks. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have to balance the idea that the Yankees are always a win now type of team with trying to stay a little bit younger. And I think that's where they strike the balance. They get these guys who could be up in the big leagues in a couple of years and be sort of average pieces, and then they can continually fill in pieces as they go along. And they don't have to worry about, you know, drafting a guy and saying, oh, we'll wait 5 or 6 years for them to be ready, and then they just disappear. And then they're left with nothing.
I'd be okay with a couple of lead rebuild years. It'll take, like, two, and then... Dynasty!
Yeah, the dynasty's right back there.
The dynasty recipe. Oh, man. So I guess we'll probably be hearing more about how many of these players will actually sign. So far, the only one we've heard that won't sign is Josh Rogers, who's their 11th round pick, and that's not too surprising. But I guess we'll hear more about it soon. They've already pretty much gotten their main guys signed. I guess Caprillion's not signed yet, but they're very optimistic that they'll work something out.
Yeah,
Degano hasn't signed yet either, but again, he's an Indiana State senior, so he's pretty much going to sign. So.
Yeah, I think Caprillion's agent is Boris, so... Mm-hmm. My inclination is that they wait as long as possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Boris is going to try to force the Yankees' hand to use cost-cutting measures throughout the draft to save money for Caprillion. So I think
been saving on a lot of picks, pretty much.
Yeah, he's going to be slightly overslot.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, Finley, obviously, they're going to... I think Finley was always going to be the guy they're going to pay the most for. Just like last year, Takar was going to be the one they were going to pay the most for. But, yeah. Lindgren, incidentally, is another example of one of those guys that is just very high floor that they felt very comfortable in, who could be making an impact almost immediately out of the bullpen. And sure enough, like, he was just up. And yeah. I think if maybe... You know, he's on Scranton's DL right now, so maybe if there was something bothering him during his brief stint here, but he's basically big league ready now, so that's fits in with that.
Yep.
So that's some draft talk. Now we'll go to the tweet bag. We don't have too much.
Feeling MLB draft in here.
Z. Get Matt Trace Z.
I regret nothing.
Okay, so, yes, I am okay. I don't see anything outside my window to answer your first question, Matt.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm nodding once. Greg Kirkland, the Red Sox are becoming a laughingstock. Best feeling or bestiest feeling? It's a pretty great feeling.
This.
I think right now they are at the bottom of the American League.
I love it. And it's also a joke.
Unless Sandoval is on Instagram while pooping.
Creeping on people, liking photos, you know. Just doing his Pablo thing.
The funniest thing is that woman, the pictures he found, the woman only has, like, she only follows, like, 32 people. And, like, one of them is Pablo Sandoval.
He's just lurking. Yes, Boston, 18, or not 18, oh man, I wish they had 18 wins, that'd be funny. They are 28 and 39, which is, oh wait, no, they won tonight, never mind. Thanks, Barves, losing. Jerks. Yeah, Red Sox won tonight over the Braves, so they're 29 and 39, and so that brings them back even with the A's. But for the most part, they're pretty bad. then that should continue.
Yeah, I don't see it changing.
Okay. Next from Kayshaw 90. So far this season, the Yankees are 35-0 and scoring more runs than the other team. That pace seems unsustainable throughout the course of the season. Should they look into also winning games when not scoring more than the other team? Winning a game or five that way could be a difference maker between playoffs and not playoffs. Please outline a 4-point plan regarding this important issue.
I think more.
Bunt more. One, bunt more, definitely. Two, Brendan Ryan cleanup hitter. I think that's the key. Three, I think A-Rod needs to start seeing some time behind the plate.
And just keep putting Carlos Beltran in right field.
Yes. Oh my god, Carlos Beltran on the D. Gordon triple. It's a good thing that he hit that home run tonight, because, oh my god, he played that so terribly. I get that D. Gordon is one of the fastest runners in baseball, but just, you know, I'm getting there. Oh, I guess he's going for three.
They need to get him one of those things that J.R. Smith rolled into on the finals, like the locker room. I don't know if you saw that. You saw that.
I don't think I did. Matt Keegan tweeted, Beltran needs one of those JR hoverboards, but like all the time. Which sounds about right.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, next.
Get him like anything. Get him like a Jazzy.
Yeah. Get him one of those, you know, those, when someone breaks their knee or something like that, and they won't go around on one of those scooters with the knee on knee, just put him on one of those and have them scoot around. All right, for next one from Stevie Graham Crackers, is Dylan Betances doing anything to be even better? Striking dudes out and walking even fewer.
I don't think there's anything he could do to be better. He's only had, like, one earned run.
His ERA plus is 1,530.
Get higher than that! It needs to be infinity.
Well, compared to last year, he is actually, his work rate is a little bit higher, but he's also at 14.7 K per 9.
Unacceptable.
And his hit per 9 is 3.1. So, 35 innings, 12 hits. And due to, I think it's due to that, like, he's had, two total games when he just randomly had no control. Maybe it's just because he was gassed, and the one was earlier in the season when he was still figuring. He was still adjusting from spring training.
And that weird Angels game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, he's walked at least two batters in one game four times, and other than that, he only has, like, a few. Dellum should keep doing this, because that's cool. He has 2.1 war already.
Yeah.
And how many innings? 35. Yep, sounds about right.
I think he was up there for the Baseball Prospectus DRA war as well. It was something great. I think he had negative DRA.
Well, he is sixth in the AL in war for pitchers. Not among relievers, among all pitchers. He has the same as Chris Sale. And Felix Hernandez.
Oh my god. So for DRA, his DRA war is the same. It's higher than Jake Odorizzi, Felix Hernandez, Garrett Cole, Matt Harvey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His DRA minus, which is a DRA minus, is negative 13.
That seems okay. Okay. Next tweetbag question. Should the Yankees trade for Cueto? And if yes, what would we have to give up? The answer is lots.
A lot. I think the CC Renda trade was like four good prospects, where Michael Brantley was the fourth piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously Cueto's not quite at CC level, but it's the prospect cost would have to be pretty high. Like, I think you'd have, you would have to say goodbye to at least one of Severino or Judge.
Severino.
That trade isn't getting done without at least one of them.
Yeah, it's like Severino, like Mitchell, and like Raf Snyder.
Mm-hmm. You're not gonna be able to get him for one of these packages. Like, Brian Mitchell.
Alright, so, Brian Mitchell, Austin Romine, Ramon Flores,
Dante Bichette Jr., and Eric Ruth. Get it done, Cash.
There you go, done.
All right. And the last feedback question, spoiler question. So if you have not watched Game of Thrones, the last most recent episode, I guess skip this part, but more likely to come back from the dead, Stephen Drew or Jon Snow?
It's Jon Snow. Jon Snow is coming back from the dead. Like, there's no way. See, the thing is, Stephen Drew's not a core part of this plot of the Yankee story. Jon Snow is the center of the plot. There's no way that he would get killed off.
So there.
It's just not going to happen.
I have no real idea what that means.
I don't really watch Game of Thrones much either, so. But I will go by Matt P's word.
Yeah, Jon Snow is it's not going to happen. If he dies, I don't even know what I'm going to do.
At that point,
let chaos reign.
I do love that Stephen Drew he still has this one weird skill where occasionally he can run into a fastball and he has 9 home runs, which seems way too high for him at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of odd.
And, like, the one article at BP Bronx the other day, someone found out that he's hitting, like, 067 on basically everything else other than fastballs, something like that. But, you know, occasionally people decide, hey, maybe I'll get a throw a fastball by Stephen Drew. Actually, most of the time it does work. But still, 9 home runs, which is as many as Yoenis Cespedes and David Ortiz.
And I think we can infer they're all equal players.
Yep.
But his isolated power is still under 200. I find that odd. I don't know. It's weird.
What is a Mark Canha, and why is he slugging 431?
Okay.
Some dude on the A's.
No, it's a random A's guy.
I have no idea who that is.
He's this 26-year-old. He's a rookie. He's played 50 games, and he has a 110 OPS plus. So
that's just Billy Beane pulling a league average player out of his hat.
Drafted by the Florida Marlins in the 7th round of the 2010 draft, and he was traded to the Rockies in the Rule 5 draft, and then the Rockies traded into the A's for basically nothing. So, yes, that's the Billy Beane move, exactly.
And he's going to win the MVP next year.
Still doesn't make up for trading Josh Donaldson for nothing, though.
Yeah, that's the unforgivable sin.
Yeah, thanks for that, Billy Beane. We really needed Josh Donaldson in this freaking division.
How is Brett Laurie even doing?
They got Brett Laurie.
Brett Laurie with his 318 WOBA. Not that good.
Well, anyway, now we're going to move on to the end of the podcast and the Yankee and Mitre of the Week. All right, Matt F., who is your Yankee of the Week?
I'll give it to Mason Williams because he had a good game tonight and hit a home run in his first game. That was cool.
Yeah.
It was overall, really cool. Yes, he's been fine, but
it was really cool to see like his family's reaction, too. It's always fun to see that.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Alright, Matt P., your Yankee of the Week.
Mine's going to be Mark Teixeira for being good at hitting. I don't know how else to explain it other than that, but he's been good at hitting.
You're not wrong. My Yankee of the Week is going to be Michael Pineda, because if he was in a situation where he was able to have more stamina, it would have been really cool to see him go deeper in that no-hit attempt. But unfortunately, it was not to be the case. And also, unfortunately, Christian Yelich homered like a jerk. So, alas. But still, that was a great game from Pineda. Yankees really needed that to turn them around. Hopefully get them on one of those hot streaks again. So, Big Mike, Substantial Miguel, whatever you want to call him. All right, Mitre of the Week, Matt F.,
Do it to Nathan Eovaldi. Like, I don't know. I want to like him, but every once in a while he just goes and does bad.
Yeah. Didn't even get through an inning. A game score of 2. Preposterously low. But hey, on the bright side, he threw so few pitches that he's going to start on Saturday. That's like the darkest silver lining ever. All right, Matt P, your Beecher of the Week.
Steven Drew, because he shouldn't be on this team anymore. There's no reason anymore.
He's more machine than man now. Like, actually just a machine that sits there and occasionally makes a nice play at second and runs into a dinger, but mostly just stands around.
Like, I'm going to say this and it's going to hurt, but Brian Roberts is better.
Oof. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think
it's pretty close.
Brian Roberts was better.
I would say they're pretty equal, because Brian Roberts, like, was just atrocious with the glove at this point, and he was hitting better, but not that much better.
Oof.
Either way, it's dark.
The fact that you could make a debate either way.
No, yeah, it's not a great time. It's not a great time.
Yeah.
All right, my Mitre of the Week... You know what? I'm going to extend this back a little bit because we didn't have a chance to talk about this. David Carpenter. He is now off this team, but by God, what a disappointing acquisition that was. Like, he was supposed to come in and be the anti-Sean Kelly, and yet he managed to be even worse than Sean Kelly. And now he's gone because he was terrible.
Yep.
At least they got Chasen Shreve, and Shreve is awesome in that trade. And Manban is exactly like, even though he has nice stats, stuff is nothing, basically. So, David Carpenter, man. Whatever. Go post your inevitable 1.5 ERA with the Nationals. It's probably going to happen, but, man.
Yeah, I mean, that was... If the Yankees, like, did hold on to him for a little longer, like, maybe he would have been, like, okay, but, yeah, who cares?
Do you know, hey, he's made 2 appearances at the Nationals so far. 2 scoreless innings. Just 1 walk. No hits. Of course.
Yep. Yep.
Like a jerk, like Matt Thornton. Whatever. Alright. Time to wrap this up. Do you guys have anything else?
Nope.
Okay.
So, you can follow me on Twitter at MernsPSA. Follow Matt F. on Twitter at MattF15. You can follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at MattProv94. Follow Pinstripe Alley at Pinstripe Alley. And the GIFs account at PSA_GIFs. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. Rate and review us on iTunes. And go say if A-Rod can get 3,000 hits tonight if you're in the New York area. Or, you know, just show up at the stadium and try to push your way into the doors. It'll be great. Just so that I can be like, the stadium is in a rage to see A-Rod get 3,000. It was pretty
say
amazing.
Say we sent you.
Yes. It was pretty amazing to hear, like, just in the 8th inning when the Marlins pitcher walked A-Rod in 4 pitches, and the fans were so pissed off that he didn't get a chance to get 3,000. That was the best I've seen Yankee Stadium in quite some time. Maybe since the Ibanez homers, but...
Yeah.
That's pretty hilarious.
No.
Oh, Jeter's
hit last year.
Yeah. I don't know why I forgot about that already. Maybe in my mind it happened like 7 years ago.
That was quite a harrowing night. That took, like, years off my life.
It was. Okay. So, from Matt F. and Matt P., this is Andrew. Have a good night.